almost heaven. West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life was old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, blowing like the breeze. Country road, take me home to the place where I belong. West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home. Country road.
Welcome back to My Story of America. Yes, welcome back. That's why I feel welcome to be back to this program this week. It was great to take a week off. I am your host, Michael T. George. I thought last week's show was great because I wasn't the one doing it, and I thought that Suzanne did a phenomenal job filling in. She just really, really did an excellent job, and I'm so grateful. It's nice to have that kind of professionalism, people that you can call on. Sometimes you just need a break. Sometimes you've got so many things going on. But this is My Story of America Radio. I love getting out, meeting people, traveling, finding cool stories to bring to you, the listeners, every week here on the Veritas Radio Network. It's radio the way it should be. You know, and if you've got a chance to listen to some of the shows at the Veritas Radio Network, I think you'll get an idea, sense that, you know, the folks here do care passionately, not only about our country, but they care passionately about Christ as well, and about really putting forth a product that's not only logical, but is factual and has a strong element of faith. And that's what I really like about the shows, about the topics that we cover. It gives information that is sorely needed that we're not experiencing. I like to bring forth stories. Why? Because stories are very powerful. They have a great way to basically transform a person's thinking in a positive way or a negative way. That's why I like to bring positive stories every week for you to take part of. So this week, before we begin our episode, we're going to talk about snipe hunting. Yes, snipe hunting. Maybe you have never been snipe hunting. It's something that in West Virginia, it's almost like a rite of passage. As a kid growing up, at some point, somebody has taken you snipe hunting. And it's this really interesting concept. Now, when I was a child, teenager, let's put it that way, I was instructed about a snipe, and I didn't know what it was. It's basically, I was told that it's this bird that has these really unique feathers, and they actually take the feathers off of this bird and utilize them in hats, basically for they're for decoration. That's what I was told. But they're extremely valuable. So, okay, not a problem. So a couple of buddies of mine said, look, this is what we do. We know where they are. We know when they come out. They only come out at night. So we're going to head you out into this area of the woods. We'll all three go together. We'll put you right where it is. Here's the bag. Really, all we had was I used a pillowcase because he said that's the basically thing. If you get a bright pillowcase, they'll run right for it. Simple. So what they do is they put me in this little clearing in the woods, and they said, here's what we're going to do. He'll go this way, I'll go that way, and we will basically be able to flush out the snipes and head them towards you. And as you come, if you just hold the bag open, just stand there holding the bag open, a snipe will run right into it, and you just close the bag. That's all there is to it. All you got to do is stand there with your bag held open, and you will get a wonderful treat, a wonderful prize. That'll be good. Okay, so I'm thinking, hey, we can sell this. We can make money. This is something valuable to me. So I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And then I soon realized it came to, I don't know, after maybe an hour, I realized that I had been had. There was no such thing as snipes. There was no such thing as a snipe hunting. I was basically taken into the woods and left with an empty sack. Well, you know what, ladies and gentlemen? This week's story is a lot like snipe hunting. Because when you hear the story of Anna, and you hear the promises of communism and socialism, you're going to end up feeling like, wow, I've been had. It's like I've been on a snipe hunt, being promised lots of great things, but in the end, I'm just left here standing alone, holding an empty bag. This week's story comes straight from Cuba. Yes, the paradise that it is, Cuba. This week, get ready for my story of America Radio. May change. Their faces may be different, but in the end, the result is always still the same. Innocent people get hurt, all because somebody wants ultimate power. Anna grew up on an island in the Caribbean that was quite magical for her. No, she didn't have a lot of money, and material wealth really didn't mean much to her anyway. Just the happiness she received from the contentment, from spending time with her family, her friends. Just that faith that she had that formed the foundation of her home. The love was limitless. Her dad, her father, was a hard worker, and he was incredibly smart. And not only did he have a master's degree in agriculture, he was also a teacher by trade, and he had 3 PhDs. All of his students loved him because he made things so easy to understand. It was because of this talent and expertise that he would later become a target. Growing up in Cuba was incredibly wonderful for Anna. She had a very nice childhood. And because of her father, her yard was filled with fruit trees because, after all, he loved agriculture. She said she could remember coming home from school every day and climbing those trees and picking fruit for her afternoon snack. The soil on the island was so rich, you could grow anything in it. She says she can remember on one occasion, her father went to the schoolyard, took some branches from one of the amborella trees, which is a tree which produces tropical fruit similar to a plum, and he brought them home and planted them. And within just a few years, they had this awesome fruit available in their own backyard. Literally, the dirt was so rich you could get a yield of crops a couple of times a year. Her father taught at a private school on the island, run by the Presbyterian Church. The education they provided was second to none. In fact, they were even required to attend a fifth year of high school just to ensure they were properly prepared to enter the world. They wanted their students to become a success. And from Anna's early childhood and through her teenage years, her world was happy, carefree. She went anywhere she wanted on the island. The white sandy beaches pressed against clear blue water painted a picture so serene, one would find it difficult to even imagine a better sight. Yes, Anna did grow up in an island paradise. She assumed she would never leave, but unfortunately that all changed the day the communist revolution came to town and Fidel Castro became the leader. Anna had grown up under a leader. Batista was the leader when she was a child, and even though he would become a dictator, still they had quite a bit of freedom. But things began to change. The people began to become discontented because Batista had turned bad. He'd begin manipulating things for his own benefit more and more. And so a new man had came onto the scene. A man that began to promise others that he would take care of them, much like another man that came along years ago in Nazi Germany. But Fidel came in promising democracy and freedom. But unfortunately, what he brought was slavery and destruction. And when Fidel Castro and his rebels marched into Havana in 1959, they were actually welcomed as conquering heroes by the cheering crowds. But those people had no way of knowing that this revolution would soon rob them of their most basic human rights and political freedoms. The year before the revolution began, Anna had actually went to the United States to attend college, and she was unaware of what was actually happening back in her homeland. But once word got to her, she immediately began to worry for her family. The stories that she heard sent chills up and down her spine. Unfortunately for Anna, the homeland she always knew would no longer be the place that she loved. It was headed to a disastrous destination. All over the country, people began losing their homes, farms, and valuables to the newly installed communist government. And just down the road from where her father was born, there was a beautiful farm. And the owner had large palm trees all over his property. Those trees produced some of the best fruit in the area. Anna said she remembered it quite well. But unfortunately, somebody else had interest in this piece of property. Oh yeah, you guessed it. Fidel Castro's communist government decided they needed the land. They came in, cut down all the trees, destroyed the animals, and left this poor farmer with nothing. Oh, it was not uncommon. This was not a random occurrence. Castro's communist cronies often came to a person's home, and they gave it to someone else. Anna can remember specifically a family who lost their home when the government came in and said, "This house is too big for your family." They kicked them out, put several other families in there, all because of fairness. We needed to be fair. Anna was so devastated hearing the stories from her homeland. Freedom was gone. And the Cubans who had once cheered for revolution were now left crying in the streets. As the people became poorer and poorer, Fidel and his family, well, you guessed it, they became richer. His government thrived while average Cubans died. People were told, "Don't worry, we'll take care of you." But then the government left them out in the cold. Anna told me, she said, maybe that's why the United States' motto is "In God We Trust." Because "In Government We Trust" never, ever works. But Fidel was certainly not alone when it came to his totalitarian ideas. Sure, he was fully backed by the Soviet Union, but he also had some cold-blooded assassins who were assisting him in his new reign of terror. Che Guevara was one of these men. Yeah, you've probably seen his picture. It was right behind President Obama when he went to visit Cuba just recently. Che, he was a mainstay of this hardline pro-Soviet faction presiding over the Cuban Revolution's first firing squads. In fact, Che founded Cuba's labor camp system. It wasn't really a labor camp. It was nothing more than just a place to incarcerate your enemies or those who disagreed with your godless communist principles. Actually, in front of the Havana Harbor, there actually stood two castles. Parts of them were actually strategically placed over the water so a trapdoor could actually be opened from the inside. Often, a person would be brought and stand on that door. And then Che and his buddies would open the door, and the person would be dropped into shark-infested waters. Those that dissented and wouldn't come over, well, the firing squads took care of those, and their bodies were also dropped through these doors, never to be seen again. Anna says she remembers her father saying that an untold number of people were killed in this manner. Remember, this is the government of Fidel Castro. This is Cuba when the communist revolution took over. Yes, this was their new government. Remember the one that said, "We're going to help the poor. We are going to help the needy. We are going to be there for them all." Unfortunately, it was all a lie. Che liked to proclaim himself a modern-day Robin Hood, when in fact, he was nothing but a cowardly butcher who robbed from all the Cuban people. It is quite disturbing, in fact, Anna says, to see people today walking around with his picture on t-shirts, proclaiming what a great freedom fighter he was. Nothing could be farther from the truth. But this is what Anna says. Communism gives you lives covered with fantasy without any ounce of truth. But her parents did believe in truth, hard work, and justice. Yet now they found themselves living in a country where all of that was stripped away. The people began to see Fidel Castro for who he really was, and a new revolution started to brew in the hearts of the Cuban people. All over the island, people began to prepare, and plans were made for a time when Fidel Castro would be overthrown. But the Soviet Union was backing Castro, and now the newly elected president of the United States, John F. Kennedy, actually did seem to be on the Cuban people's side. In fact, so many Cubans had already left the country, but they wanted to come home. They wanted to get their country back. And so a plan was devised for the overthrow of Castro. And now, backed by American firepower and with the help from the CIA, a group of Cuban exiles would invade and overthrow the government. So on April 17th of 1961, 1,500 men landed in a swampy, snake and crocodile-infested area on the southern coast of Cuba, in a little area known as the Bay of Pigs. Anna recounts, "I don't know what happened or why it occurred, but to the last minute, President Kennedy withheld the air and naval support that he had promised my people. And unfortunately, Fidel Castro easily killed and captured nearly all of the invaders. I don't know why it happened. I always just figured maybe President Kennedy got cold feet. Or maybe he was convinced by the socialist element in his own party not to go through with it. But this was devastating to me and my family." Anna's two cousins were in that group of 1,500 men. They were both captured and taken to prison. And the beatings and torture they endured were quite heinous. In fact, Anna said the family feared they would never, ever see them again. However, Fidel Castro actually loved to extort money from the Cuban people, so he made a deal. You can buy their way for freedom. So all of Anna's family pulled together their money and bought their cousins out of prison. This was so hard on Anna, hearing all these stories, knowing what was happening in her homeland while she was in college in America. Her family was losing everything back home. Every letter brought news of more injustice. The stories of the terrible atrocities were endless. Fidel had promised the people he would be their savior, but instead, he became their tormentor. Oh, he was quite the chameleon. In the beginning, he was so smooth-talking and so supportive of the common working person. But after he came to power, he turned on them. In fact, one of the first officers to join Castro was assassinated because he actually spoke out against the corruption of Fidel's government. Oh, they tried to cover up his death, but word spread through the Cuban community like wildfire. "You know, it's such a tragic event," says Anna, "when you watch the government come and take away everything you've worked hard to attain. The people that had built successful companies, family farms, Castro confiscated them all. The private school where her father worked soon came under scrutiny. The Castro regime did not want anything taught that went against the communist way of life. And certainly a school teaching the merits of God and the redemption of Jesus Christ would not work well with the godless propaganda being sent into the school system. Needless to say, many of the teachers in this private school had to flee for their very lives. But Anna's father was one of the last holdouts at the school. He hated the thought of abandoning the area. But little by little, Castro's government was confiscating buildings and property. But her father, who had always been a well-respected man in the country because of his knowledge, because of the PhDs he had, he now became a target for the communists. They wanted a man with his prestige, his knowledge, to teach in their universities, training up a new generation in the ideals of Marxism. But Anna's father wanted no part of it. And for that reason, he soon became public enemy number one in the eyes of the Cuban government. And here's Anna, a Cuban citizen living in America, going to school. Oh, she did still have the opportunity at times to travel home to see her family, but it was sad. The island paradise she had once loved was being transformed into a wasteland of communist failure. People before who had plenty to eat now went hungry. Where once there were local doctors helping the sick, now the government controlled the health care and people went untreated. Her countrymen were dying because only the chosen received medical assistance. Yes, they were promised universal health care, but they received universal hardship instead. And as long as Castro and the communists controlled Cuba, there was going to be no hope for prosperity. In fact, one evening before Anna's return to the States, her father and her discussed the issue of her next semester of college. Castro allowed no money of any kind to leave the country, and so this would make paying Anna's tuition a serious complication. Before she'd be able to fly out of the country, all of her possessions would be searched. She knew if any money would be found, it would mean a jail sentence. The Presbyterian Church running the school where her father taught had put money directly into his account. So if they could just get a check, a signed check, out of the country, she could get her next semester paid. But that would prove to be a very, very difficult dilemma. You are listening to My Story of America Radio here on the Veritas Radio Network. The story I'm sharing with you today is actually in my first book, My Story of America, Inspirational Stories of Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness. This is the true story of Anna. I remember sitting in the kitchen here in Georgia with this lady and her pouring out her heart about everything that they went through, everything that they lost, everything they experienced. This is her story, her words. She grew up in Cuba. She experienced these things. Her family experienced these things. This is what they went through. This is what I like. I like them to just pour out and say, here's the truth. You know, when you get a firsthand account of what it is, it means a whole lot more. We will be returning for the continuation of Anna's story in just a few moments. This is Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be. And I'm your host, Michael T. George, and you are listening to My Story of America Radio, the powerful story of Anna and what took place when the Cuban government was overthrown by Fidel Castro. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
What you just heard is the reality missing from reality TV. My Story of America. We'll be right back on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.